Hi, welcome to Transformation Talk. This podcast series is aimed at people involved in transforming organisations of all shapes and sizes. My name's David Lanceville, and I'm absolutely delighted to be here with Professor Dan Cable from the London Business School. He's joined me to share his experiences and research on how to be alive at work, the title of his brand new book. Dan's research focuses on employee engagement, leading change, and organisational culture. So, Dan, you said in your book very eloquently that our brains are wired through our seeking system to seek out play, self-expression, and experimentation. Why is it that children, musicians, artists get this? Why do business people really struggle to get it?
Yes. Well, thanks first for having me on the show. This is very nice. It's a great question. At the root of it for me is this idea that what is natural over the eons would have been relatively small production facilities, and that might be cobblers or blacksmiths or farming, where 2 to 4 people would work together, and they'd often be related, and they got to see the whole flow of work. They got to see from the seed to the customer, or they got to see from a piece of leather to a shoe. And I'm not going to say that that is where all beauty existed, but I think that that's the soup that our brains were stewed in. When, in the 1900s, we invented big companies, we invented management, a necessary ingredient of scaling up was control. And again, I'm not saying control as though it's always bad or as though it's a dictatorship. I'm just saying that managers need to be culpable and they need to be held to a standard of delivering a promised product on a certain day.
Yeah.
And I think that for that reason, we set up structures that not only let us push on efficiency and delivery, but then reward that extrinsically.
Yeah.
So work doesn't often end up feeling like play because it's prescripted and we are being evaluated. And if we get it wrong, we get punished.
Yeah. It's interesting, I talk to business leaders who often go up on a stage and say, I want to empower my people. And then they walk off it and literally the email fires off and it's like, here's your next KPI, here's your next target. It's a control mechanism. I'm just wondering, is it going to be a moment? Is there going to be a moment where we suddenly say, hey, let's loosen up on the control? Is it going to be a crisis? Is it going to be certain leaders taking it on? What do you think is going to be the fuel for this change?
There are some organizations that do just that. They're in full play mode. You could even say most startups are this way. They really don't have the confined, defined job descriptions that this is the cell in which you operate and these are the prescribed behaviors. And if you don't hit these targets, then we aren't going to reward you. That's how startups often operate. Even some very large organizations are fairly lawless, meaning they just say, you know, Valve Software is an example of this, right? They simply say, work on what you like, and they've made, you know, whatever it is, $20 billion dollars. Wow. Doing business this way. I don't think that's going to become the norm anytime soon. What I love is the idea of big businesses thinking small. I love the idea of building pods or centers of excellence where a lot of the individuals understand the full cycle of the work, are personalizing the purpose. I think that it's really exciting to think about giving people 70, 80% of the time when you do have to do repetitive, predictable actions, but there is enough time and maybe even as much as an hour a day where you're just fooling around.
Yeah.
You're just trying things out and playing. And it's not that that doesn't help the company, but there's a mindset that says that would be wasteful. Yeah. And I think that's the mindset that's changing.
It's like a fixed mindset, right?
Yes, that's very nice. Carol Dweck.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. But it requires a trust, doesn't it? It
certainly does.
But it's interesting about traditional companies. I always think of startups as the ones who can do this more easily. And I've always wondered whether traditional companies can become weird again, sort of eccentric again. And if I was a manager trying to, you know, I'm running a business unit, I'm running a transformation effort, and I wake up the dormant people, if you like, and it's like, that's pretty scary. Where do you start? Is it a pilot? Is it an experiment? Where do you actually start?
Both of those words work really well, I think. Experiment even better than pilot. Pilot to me implies we're going to try to scale this up and roll it out. This is our first go. whereas experiment means we're not even sure what it is yet.
Right.
But they're both good words. I mean, I think anything that pushes us toward practicing and playing as opposed to repeating a predefined action is what we're talking about.
Yeah.
But when you said, where do you start? Why don't we kind of take that seriously and just say, it appears that a place to start is with why. I really think that this is the notion that the leader, the employees would have a collective sense of where we're trying to push and what it solves for us if we get there. Mm-hmm. The idea that here's a customer need and we don't really satisfy that need. Let's see if we can. Or here's a new technology that we're just not good at, but we need it to be relevant. Let's see if we can start to get good at that.
It takes time, doesn't it?
It has to. The brain
can't rush
muscle.
It. It's not like the next time. It's not a 5-minute conversation. You have to actually get deep and spend time and invite different people to contribute to that conversation.
That's absolutely right. I mean, if we take Carol Dweck seriously, the brain is a muscle. It can be worked out and strengthened, but it doesn't happen in a conversation or overnight. Mm-hmm. If you want to learn a new programming language, if you want to start using social media to get in touch with your consumer base, the first couple of goes won't be seamless.
Yeah.
It will feel awkward. It will feel uncomfortable. It will seem to emit mistakes. This learning mindset says savor that because that's where the learning's happening. That's where the strengthening is occurring.
How do you get the safety? I mean, you talked about psychological safety, both at the individual level and the leader level. And, you know, a lot of companies are, they've got loads of stakeholders, investors, regulators, government, all challenging them if they put a step out of place. So at the same time, you want to create more of a learning mindset, which means you might make some mistakes. How do you combine the two?
Mm. They are at odds.
Yeah.
I see this as an irresolvable tension.
Right.
I don't think that it is possible to think of that as an either or. Any big business, and probably even medium-sized business, will have regulations and rules, for sure. That's government imposed. But also, they have policy. They have, if you've got even 10,000 employees in two different countries or three different countries, there's a certain culture that you think makes you successful. That culture can be crystallized into policies, that this is the way we do things. Those policies can start to feel like regulations, only they're internal instead of
external. Absolutely.
So I'm not a fan of saying we're going to get rid of all that. What I'm saying is if we treat that as a frame in which we operate, how do we inject the freedom? How do we find the places and the spaces to let people play? The words you used before around experimentation, I think that's a really important ingredient in this. Mm. So it's making enough space that people can learn rather than creating procedures that they have to follow through with.
That's quite a shift, right? Because in effect, that's the control thing. It's a shift between work being centered on effort, time served. And we all need to work hard, right? But how do you shift it to one where you say, hey, you know what the purpose is? You know what you want to deliver in terms of the outcomes. And then you give people a bit of space to do it, as opposed to always checking that sort of insecurity.
That's called anxiety.
Yeah.
That's a
feature of a lot of business, I'd say.
A threat culture or an anxiety culture. And it's not one where I don't think leaders wake up in the morning and say, how do I suppress the souls of my employees today? I don't think they wake up and think maniacally like that, although some do. I don't think that's the trend. My thought is that they wake up and they say, how will I get what I promised to the customer? How will I ensure that the regulators are not unhappy with us? And so that thinking, while not evil, it's not immoral, it often yields work practices that feel confined and straitjacketed. And that's the balance that has to be resolved or restored.
Do you think that the sort of the type A hero leader, the sort of the red face, you know, time on the clock, push, 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 is he or she dead? Or are they going to evolve?
I think that is on its way out. And if we can say why, I think leaders today need to be able to adapt, listen, and learn. I don't think that it's possible they'll know how to do all the things that they need to have done.
Yeah.
The louder they yell about things that they don't know, the arrogance and the ignorance, it won't lead to good results. It'll put people in a fear threat state that will decrease creativity, It'll decrease innovation. It'll decrease play.
Yeah.
So to the extent that what we need is innovation, creativity, and play, I would say that the blustering, bumptious leader will become decreasingly effective.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So it's a wonderful news, isn't it? What was that? It had to do first with the doctor
and the bishop.
Oh, the self-expression point.
Yeah, self-expression.
More broadly. Self-expression is emotional, and so many of us are not taught how to deal with our emotions. Emotions are more powerful, more fast. They're an ancient system. They're an ancient system of motivation. Emotions motivate us to act.
Absolutely.
And they've kept our ancestors alive, but we don't have direct access to them. We don't have words to talk to our emotions. So many of us feel insecure about where they might take us if we let them out.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I find that to be something leaders will need to get good at emotions projection.
Emotions projection. That's interesting. Yeah, I like that. It's like it's considered a soft skill.
Absolutely. It's a sort or of dangerous.
Dangerous because there's probably stuff that's been they sort of pushed down somewhere. There's something about expressing yourself, showing your emotions at the right time, giving a deeper sense of who you are as a person.
That's right.
If you're trying to transform an organization, my view is if you don't give enough of yourself, you don't have your integrity and authenticity to ask more of other people. But how much disclosure is enough?
It's lovely to remember that if you don't feel inspired, how will you inspire others? I think that's a really nice question. Part of inspiration is emotional. I think that there's a safe ground in between that we might discuss really briefly, which is there is the show of emotions, and that might be anything from excitement and zest and curiosity to anger to fear, because those are all valid emotions. And they are motivating states and so on. But there might be a middle ground here, which is the self-expression around who I am at my best. The self-expression of certain perspectives that I grew up with that might be interesting to this conversation, education or travels that I've done that might be relevant here but are unique to me. It might be ideas or innovations that I am just interested in, but I don't know why. I'm just intrigued. I feel a passion around this issue. That might be a safer business space in some ways. And maybe leaders that facilitate or encourage prompt that type of self-expression, meaning let's go on a little journey together where we spend a little time each day or each week pursuing what we feel innately, intuitively interesting. What are you curious about just because?
That's the word, right? You have to have a sense of curiosity and genuine intrigue. Yep. And also have the time and willingness to sort of listen, genuinely listen. I remember a few conversations, both with colleagues and other people, where they talk about their experience either as a mountaineer, as an artist, as a musician. And sometimes they shared it in conversations, sometimes in groups. And it's sort of at the end, they go, and we sort of think some of this is relevant to work. So I think, so you had peak performance in a certain moment. They talk about how they manage their energy, their resilience, how they work as a team, all highly relevant to work. But they've sort of been programmed to say, hey, that's in a box over here. It's not quite relevant, even though actually if they injected just a tiny bit of it in their day job, wow, it would just seed amazing ideas and energy of the people around them.
That's right. That's another form of hiding from ourselves in order to be rational, cognitive, controlled. And I think that those scripts are how we've built organizational life. And it's not as though we have to blow up everything in order to change, but I think it is the case that we are due for more self-expression if we want creativity. If we want innovation, we need to be open to unpredictability.
Yeah.
And we know that the world is changing faster than ever, so that firms have to adapt. To stay alive, you have to adapt. That's where I have this... I think there's a golden age for human emotions. I've got this hope that what used to work in terms of reliability and predictability and control was a threat system of fear. Mm. And my hope is that that won't be effective. And what's needed is curiosity, enthusiasm, zest.
That is a rewiring. I would say that's a reimagining. That's a rewiring of how organization runs. You talked about the world, you know, the world of work changing. You talk about organizations, but many organizations are working more of the sort of the more flexible gig economy. We're actually, I was talking to one organization saying, hey, we've got 2/3 of our organization now on sort of more flexible arrangements. How do I create a sense of purpose for the people who might only be working a week or 2 weeks with us? So how does your thesis work in more networked or open organizations?
Well, let's go good news, bad news. The good news is there's going to be a lot of opportunities for self-expression there and a fair amount of freedom, a fair amount of experimentation, meaning that when I am, let's say, almost my own contractor, I'm an Uber driver, the way that I talk with customers, the way that I dress, the type of car that I drive, these are all self-expression opportunities. If I'm a contractor that's doing a bit of digital work, the hours that I keep, the sources that I use, the programming language that I use, the network that I go to ask questions, those are all opportunities for self-expression and for the feeling of freedom, of feeling like a micro-entrepreneur.
Right.
So I find that there's some hope in that. The downside, as you're saying, is on a certain day, it's going to be a smallish bit of work often. It might be difficult for me to understand the bigger picture of that, but I'll bet if we ran an experiment where we randomly assigned micro contractors to conditions, some of whom got to meet the end customer and say, what will this piece of work do for you if I do it right?
Yeah.
And others that don't get that opportunity, they just get a draft. They just get something that says, do this by a certain day. I'll bet you that the quality and the customer satisfaction in the first one where they got to meet the customer first and understand the purpose, I'll bet you it would be higher.
I have to say, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you, learning from you, Dan. I hope it's given listeners an opportunity to reflect on their own leadership, their own transformation, and practically how to have a better day, a week, a month, a year at work.
Thank you
so much, Dan.
What a joy. Thanks for having me here.
Cheers.
Strategy in Business is a trademark of PwC. Copyright 2018 PwC, all rights reserved. PwC refers to the PwC network and or one or more of its member firms, each of which is a separate legal entity. Please see www.pwc.com/structure for further details. No reproduction is permitted in whole or part without written permission of PwC.